Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to the NXT 2.0 review. I'm Michael Sidgwick, joined by Andy Murray today to discuss everything that went down on last night's show. But before we get into it, usual spiel, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure to subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from. The daily wrestling podcast, we preview and review Raw, SmackDown, NXT 2.0. Dynamite, Rampage, pay-per-views, premium live events. We have wrestler interviews, we hold roundtable discussions, and host a roundup of the week complete with a bloody good quiz, of course, on wrestle culture. Just not this week because nobody's in. Right. We're going to try with this one. But I don't usually get work dread in the dream job, but my God, so little of the in-ring action or the storytelling on NXT 2.0 engages me in any way, shape, or form. I have no emotion for it. And in fact, I find the in-ring storytelling so forgettable and mechanical that I just forget the recaps. Wish me luck. What did you think of it, mate?
Yeah, it was a really uninspiring episode, wasn't it? At least in the early days, you had like really... And there was some stupid stuff on this show, don't get me wrong, but... In the early days of this show, and it was like they were experimenting with all these silly characters and stuff, there was at least stuff to talk about. It was like, hey, look at this stupid idea that's not going to take, or hey, how is this taking, and all of this.
He's a farmer.
Yeah, exactly. And now it's just genuinely a really boring show populated primarily by extremely green wrestlers who aren't TV ready. So I didn't have a great time this week. There were some there's some bits and pieces I like, which we'll get to, obviously, but... For the most part, kind of typical show. It's the kind of thing where you can see the purpose of almost everything, and you can sit there and you can go, okay, they did this to get to this, and this spawned from this, and this match existed because they did this last week, and next week they'll do this. But that's not a very exciting way to consume and analyze professional wrestling, particularly when even though the developments might be logical or make sense or whatever, they are performed by people who are learning their craft and are therefore not the most competitive. Telling.
Indeed, it's almost cruel.
It is.
We're going to kick off now because Nikita Lyons defeats Kiana James. The story of the match, basically, or the story of the feud, is that Kiana James doesn't feel like Nikita Lyons is a good advocate for women or some bollocks like that. Then they have the match. And the story, if you can really call it that, is that she targets the knee, which requires a cell job on the part of Nikita Lyons, which I would describe generously as not good. When she fires up, which she signifies by roaring, because her last name sounds a little bit like a wild animal, like a lion, so she roars. She attempts some kind of cannonball flip into the corner. She misses James's head by a good half a foot, and the turnbuckle takes an absolute pounding. And nonetheless, she recovers, hits a finish. She does the pin that she gets told to do by men, and that's a lot other than a post-match angle where the feud, capital M, capital C, must continue because she attacks her with a large purse.
Yeah.
And that was the only money in the ring. Sorry. I will try not to be a dick.
Well, I mean, so what this did, if it did anything successfully beyond achieving the goal of the feud must continue, TM, was that it identified a clear area for improvement for Nikita Lyons, that being selling. Because there wasn't any here. Which is, you know, she's a learning wrestler. She's a growing wrestler, all of that stuff. They're in this system to learn. But maybe don't do a leg match on television if this is something that the person on the defensive side of it is just, you know, really ineffective at. This wasn't no fighting spirit thing where she was popping up and fighting through the pain and, like, I'm not going to let it show yet because I want to show you how tough I am, but in a minute it's really going to hurt because it's going to take a toll. This was just no selling. She gets this leg worked over, and, you know, I think the offensive work by Kiana James to target it was broadly fine, pretty decent. She's not like Zack Sabre Jr. or anything, but, you know, she did a good enough job in control of it. And Nikita Lyons just straight pops up. She did a kip up like a second later on this wonky knee that we're supposed to believe has been worked over. She's running around. She's throwing herself around. I think just before the finish, she kind of slaps it a little bit and goes, oh, yeah, I'm supposed to sell this. So, yeah, I mean, a growing experience, a learning experience for sure. And if people are evaluating these matches in the Performance Center and sitting there going, this is what didn't go so well. If I'm the coaches, I'm going, okay, let's drill selling for about 6 months because this was not good.
It's just, again, I go back to the word cruel. It's like, I don't go home, right, and say, James, get your homework out. I want to know what you've been doing at school, right? My 7-year-old son, James, get your homework out, right? What I'm going to do, right, is I'm going to analyze spelling for spelling, sentence structure for sentence structure, your work. And what I'm going to do is record it on a podcast for the entertainment of the masses. Right, James, you still have trouble getting your D's and your B's the right way around. What you're doing with this spelling here is you're going for the phonetic spelling. So you're not actually thinking about the actual spelling of the word, you're just sounding it out in your head, and I can kind of read what it means, but it's nonetheless wrong. Just remember what you learned, James, right? Okay. And that's the podcast. Like, why would anyone do that? Why is this show on television? We go backstage where Apollo Crews is buddying up with the Creed brothers, who, even in this, like, ridiculous invisible camera backstage segment, just come off as the most, like, amiable, yeah, sort of hungry to learn, just nice dudes who are baby faces, who recognizes, you know, we're not arrogant, we're not going to take the easy way out. In fact, we're going to sit here, study tape, and improve from there. It's, you know, if you're going to have a rookie show, it's better to actually acknowledge the performers as rookies, unlike Sanger, which we'll get to later. Oh, my
Oh, no.
In saunters Roderick Strong. The Creeds square up to him. He no-showed the match last week that they had, but Strong is genuinely insistent that, like, you know, the idea wasn't for me to show up. The idea was for me to do a test and prove that you could get it done without me, etc., etc., etc. And they say, like, speaking of tests, like, this is not passing the smell test. Like, I think you're being shady. Apollo Crews agrees. Crews and then Roderick Strong have an argument, and then a match is made later tonight.
Yeah,
have you got literally anything to say on this?
I mean, it's just one of those mechanical segments, isn't it? Where you can, everything is, you know, the beats that are coming, you know what it's going to lead to. You know, Roddy's going to come out and go, ha, it was an elaborate test for you, my subjects. I led you on this wild goose chase and all of this. Yeah, I like the Creed brothers a lot. I think I've liked them since they first showed up, really. I think they're a lot of fun in the ring, and they've both got some really cool moves. Like, you can tell why they're particularly high on Julius in particular. I think he's just really impressive across the board. Yeah, it's just an interesting form of melodrama. I think I kind of prefer, I definitely prefer this group actually when they were a bit more together. I'm not terribly into the bickering storyline after, you know, they've only been around for like a year or so. So, hey, if you're into the story, fair play. Not necessarily my kind of thing. I'm not a big melodrama guy, which appears to be the route we're going down with these guys in a big elaborate split. I mean, yeah, okay, cool. It's a 6 out of 10 segment on a 4 out of 10 show. So I guess it's like...
5.
Yeah, there you go.
If you split the difference. We actually, right, if you're thinking, ah, he's a moaning bastard here, we actually praised a show-long angle on Raw this week for its subtlety, for the lack of attention being called to it. It almost felt like a real thing was happening on WWE television in the background, right? We can't do that this week because it was a weird show-long angle with Lash Legend, Idris Nofi and Malik Blade, written by a man in which a woman, Lash Legend, would not shut the hell up, and she was talking so often, so loudly, without a care about the other person involved in the conversation that it actually spanned several segments. This is written by man. Or like the implication was it spanned several segments because they returned later to the show, didn't they? And she was still yakking. That's what these broads do, when they yak. And she's talking basically about a match with Alba Fire last week, and she looked great. The entrance was great. She likes Malik Blade, but, you know, not really your partner. And then, you know, the other one comes in. Oh, Jesus Christ. Anyway, it all sets up something later in the show, which we'll get to as and when. We then go to the rounds match.
rounds.
Incredibly inexplicable affair worked between Wes Lee and Trick Williams. Which, oh my God, where to begin with this? It's kind of a hybrid boxing kickboxing wrestling match in which no momentum happens. The in-ring work isn't great. Look, I love Trick Williams, and I will yet again manifest this. Put Trick Williams in the LA Dojo for 18 months, right? And then make him a fundamentally solid as hell worker, and then let that personality fly in the main roster, because he could really be something. If he's getting made to do nonsense like this, he will never be anything. The nonsense basically is a 6-round match, and there's 20 second breaks between the rounds, blah, 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 blah. It kind of begins this sort of a boxing match, and then the second one begins with the monkey flip, and I'm thinking, what on earth are you actually playing at here? And at various points, because the whole playing on the Muhammad Ali iconography, so at various points they remove and then pick back up boxing gloves. Okay, just stay with me here. And in the end, Wes Lee picks up a boxing glove and punches Trick Williams in the face, and that's the finish. And, you know, they do the whole the famous line from the Rumble in the Jungle, whatever it was. Right, okay. So closed fists were legal in this match if, in fact, the boxing gloves were there and that was the finish. Why pick up a boxing glove? Why not just do it without a boxing glove so it would inflict more damage? Why were there boxing gloves? Why was there a monkey flip in a boxing match? Why were there rounds in a wrestling match? Why couldn't you have just in a worked boxing match?
Yeah. Yeah.
So this Murray, what was this, man?
Overly gimmick nonsense between two guys I like a lot, unfortunately. Yeah, you're dead right. I mean, they do they messed around with rounds-based stuff in NXT UK, I guess, with the Heritage Cup and all of that stuff. But this was like, yeah, you can see the image they're going for, right? They had Trick Williams repeat the Muhammad Ali pose when he was standing over Wes the other week. So it's like, hey, boxing. It's just so transparently gimmicky that it's none of it feels organic, none of it really feels natural. You have this the first round here, and to be fair, right, Trick Williams looks like he knows how to throw a punch. He puts his body into it, and it's like, I'm not sure if he has any like legitimate boxing experience. Maybe he does. If that's been mentioned as part of this, I've completely missed it because my brain is made of Swiss cheese. But yeah, he looks like he knows how to throw a punch. So it makes complete logical sense then that the guy who doesn't really know what he's doing when it comes to this striking-based stuff has him on his ass in the first round. This is not very convincing. And yeah, then the stuff with the glove. Look, I thought it was quite amusing watching Trick Williams doing the Art Jimmerson gimmick with one glove on, trying to wrestle and punch at the same time. Like it's quite funny across the board. And, you know, little cheap shot after the bell at least gave it some flavor between one of the rounds there. But yeah, a needless overcomplication, I think. Why does everything have to be turned into a cartoon? Like, I get it, right? It's a kids' TV show, but it's also a TV show that is primarily watched by 60-year-old men.
And it's very horny.
Yeah, exactly. As we know from the demographic information when it comes out every single week. So it's the identity crisis of this thing continues. They have to dress everything up as this silly, nonsensical thing. And if, you know, a transition is to be expected, we're in different creative eras now, but if the purpose of this show is to prepare people for an easier transition to main roster life, I don't really think Triple H is going to book this kind of tripe. So maybe him and Shawn Michaels should get on the same page and figure something out. Because, look, I really like both of these guys. I think Trick is one of the most arresting on-screen presences on the entire brand. He's very, very entertaining. A work in progress between the ropes, absolutely. But he has things that cannot be taught. And Wesley's a tremendous pro wrestler.
Yeah, fantastic. He's great.
Yeah. But they took away the thing that Wesley is best at, which you mentioned on the preview, that being his ability to flow and go really quick and work a really brisk pace and work all these spots and stuff, by having him limited by time restrictions and needing to pretend he's in a boxing match just arbitrarily at various points. It's just a failed concept. And I've had enough.
Yeah, me too. Moving swiftly on, we get a Chase University skit, right, where general manager Andre Chase, it would appear, they think there's an actual university in NXT. And it's just the most bizarre thing. So anyway, Thea Hale, who's like the newest, sort of girl on campus, I guess, is she was playing out in the quad, right?
Yeah.
At this university that is in the wrestling company, right? And when she was playing, they were just tossing the ball around on the quad, on campus, you know, as the co-eds do. And unfortunately for Ariana Gray, she got hit in the face with it. And that's a big shame for her, because as a vapid women's wrestler in NXT, she was a former beauty queen pageant, and she cannot sanction the idea of having a black eye on her face because it takes away her primary asset, yeah, which is her looks, of course.
You're a professional fighter.
And that.
It's like, if you're worried about that, right, be Vega from Street Fighter with a mask.
Yes.
Right? That was his gimmick. He was vain. You don't want to get hit in the face, so wear a metal mask thing. Do that. That might hurt if someone tried to forearm you, admittedly, but, you know.
It's a good defensive weapon as well.
Also, Vega was, like, the best Street Fighter.
So
character.
Cool.
I mean, I like D Honda, because if you could, like, if you were just...
Don't
like,
be an E Honda car. Were you an E Honda car?
I was an E Honda. Whatever. man. Like, you could just spam the slap.
Where you just hide in the corner.
Yeah, that's it. And you just go, ba 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 ba, and no one can touch you. Like, it's the game, you play to win, baby. You played to win.
I was so boring. I liked Ryu.
Oh, okay. All just right.
He's got an iconic look.
Yeah, it's classic. And I guess if you can master Ryu, you've probably mastered the game, right?
Yeah.
Because it's simple, effective, Hadouken, all of that. Yeah, but...
Dragon Uppercut's my favorite one.
Yeah. Who's your least... Pardon me.
To play with or to fight against?
Ooh. Both.
Eddie Honda because... Or Blanca because people did the whole...
The shock.
Yeah. And I really didn't like playing with Dalsim.
No. Dalsim always seemed like he should be easy mode. But for some reason, I always... Because he can just pop people with the stretch Armstrong arms. Yeah. I always had trouble timing it and stuff as well.
Yeah, I didn't like playing with him. And Bison was just rock as well.
Yeah, Bison was...
Bison was so rock.
This big prick at the end.
Great name. I don't know what's about M. Bison.
M. Bison.
It just rules.
It's just Bison in general. It's just a massive cow, isn't it? So,
yeah.
What's your favorite massive cow?
What the... Bison. Right, so Ariana Gray says, look, I'm going to sue you for all of this. And Chase is like, no, you're not. You can have a match. Like, what's going on? Anyway, so I'll have a match for later. Giovanni Vinci in an in-ring segment challenges A-champion Carmelo Hayes at NXT Heatwave. That match should be really, really good. And the verbiage was just a little bit back and forth boilerplate.
Yeah. His promo to set this up was just nothing. He just kind of went there and went, yeah, that happened last week, but I'm Carmelo Hayes. And then out come Vinci. Did you see the Nathan Fraser photobomb from last week?
I did not. I was on holiday and no one talks about NXT on my TL.
It was so good, actually. To set the match up last week, the North American title, they did like an open challenge gimmick, and out comes Giovanni Vinci. And obviously he does the pause on his entrance with the camera, and it's like, it's fun, it's cool, it's whatever. Well, as he's doing that, out comes Nathan Fraser bounding out from the back to steal the shot. And they catch the shot of the freeze just as he's like giving this big goofy grin, and he races past him and steals the shot. So it was like... a really fun production trick. I mean, like, we know the match was going to be good anyway, but the little quick sequence here they had just reinforced that. So, yeah, should be some good wrestling on this show when that goes down at Heatwave.
Yeah.
The ECW pay-per-view that, of course, Adam Wilborn invented a few years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. And on the subject of Heatwave, we get a video package to hype it up, the match between JD McDonagh and Bron Breakker.
I tell you what, JD McDonagh needs to be really careful standing on that little bit of wood overhanging the swamp. You're in Florida, brother.
Yeah, I know.
You know what's in Florida?
The flatties.
The flatty.
The flatty could get him.
Yeah, exactly. You don't. If you're JD McDonagh, I don't care what you know about soft bone structures, right? You go in there and you mess with the flatty, you're going to be flat lunch. You're going to be a flat white. You're going to be his coffee. How about that? I'm going to drink
I
you.
I just don't know anymore. What I do know is that this was kind of less... They've got this ability, right? And I would call it cheating, actually, where they used to do this with, like, the prime targets. This is kind of a prime target adjacent hype video where they told the story of the characters and the feud and how McDonagh is going to administer loads of pain to Bron Breakker, and the idea is, can Breakker withstand it? It's genuinely like a pro wrestling story just made into American Psycho and made extremely literal, but, you know, us idiots have to understand it that way. They are quite good at taking really stupid or incredibly generic material and editing it in video form in such a way that it doesn't look quite as bad. It's a weird thing to be good at. I don't think it's a necessarily ideal thing to be good at, but they're nonetheless good at it.
Yeah, I think this did a good job, at least, of parsing away rubbish about, I'm going to break your fingers with the hammer, and all it moved us sufficiently far from the most cringeworthy elements of this Patrick Bateman tribute act, and established this basic story a little bit more. How much pain can you take? I like pain. I write this in my blood. I guess I kind of like the show, the conflicting training styles. Bron's doing caveman stuff, which he should be. JD McDonagh's doing yoga poses in a swamp. Yeah, there you go. Watch out for the flatties, however.
Maybe not if it's him. We get the match between Ariana Grace and Thea Hale. There's some possum stuff early where Grace is like saying that, no, my eye's really actually injured. And then, you know, she's not in fact injured. We get a fire up spot with Thea Hale doing some not particularly great ground and pound. But what I will say about Thea Hale in her vignettes and everything so far, she radiates a sense of enthusiasm that is infectious even to someone like me who's like, you know, got quite a dark sense of humor and couldn't give a toss about most things. But regardless, the story here is that Thea Hale actually loses a debut match. And look, if I'm being nice and I'm situating myself here as someone who actually cares about this kind of thing, when I don't, and this particular show is, they can have some fun with the idea of, oh, she's like sort of failing college because she's not winning the matches. And then like, will she get a grade point average up? And, you know, she really has to cram, and that's a win, and then they can do a valedictorian celebration, and I'm faking this so repulsively. But that, I think, is the direction they're going to go in.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, she does a good job of playing this kind of overawed, in over her head, but at the same time, extremely enthusiastic person, so it's kind of perfect for this role. Does have some personality that comes off well backstage and in the match. I mean, the match was just two green wrestlers doing green wrestler stuff. Particularly showed in, the ground and pound, which was like, it was kind of old school WWE women's wrestling, and not in the good way, and grab the hair and hit the deck and do some slaps and stuff. And then there was like a really artificial, shall we say, struggle to grab the arm for a submission. Is a consequence of these two not being particularly experienced. That's why this happens. But yeah, I think they've probably got something, at least in Thea Hale, that can mean she can be a good TV character. She already is. So.
Yeah, she's already good in the vignettes and stuff. Maybe the ring work will catch up at some point if she goes to the LA Dojo. We got backstage to Solo Sikoa.
Sending the whole roster to work with Shibata.
I don't think we'll hit the PC, to be perfectly honest. But you know what? You tell you what, like, I'm going to make a tip myself now, because according to my notes, the next segment on the show was Solo Sikoa, who has given a decent account of himself in ring. I have not watched this for my sins, right? But apparently the match with Von Wagner was like a shocking minor triumph.
Yeah, it was good. I think Solo Sikoa, I mean, this guy, like, not to be a big gatekeepery or whatever, but this guy was a good wrestler before he signed with WWE. You know, he's quite young. I think he's 29. But he'd been around.
I had no idea about this.
Yeah, like he'd been around the block a few times. Sefa Fatu was his ring name. Like, I think he primarily worked in like the Las Vegas area, but I've definitely seen him for FSW. I've definitely seen him do a GCW spot at some point. So he was like quite a decent.
So what you're saying is there isn't even a rule-proving exception right. for how bad the Performance Center is, other than Bron Breakker.
Exactly. And even then, they don't really know how to book Bron Breakker, own prospect. So but yeah, no, like he was quite an accomplished guy. Like, you know, not necessarily like this must-see indie standout, but you'd watch him and you go, okay, this guy's like he's so solid, so fundamentally decent. And then obviously in WWE, he has the added family appeal because he's the Usos' brother and he's Rikishi's son. He's part of that legendary wrestling dynasty. Yeah, and the match last week was pretty decent. Von Wagner, bless him, still looks absolutely lost when a microphone is in his face. Endearingly so, I would argue. We've all had our fun with Von Wagner in this office previously, and I'm sure on these podcasts as well.
Yeah.
A couple of 12-inch curls, all that stuff. But it was a triumph. It was a good match that I didn't expect because Von Wagner hasn't really showed that so far. But yeah, his best match so far, and Solo Sikoa continues to look good.
Well, in the aftermath of it, it's reported that he's out between 4 to 6 weeks with a sprained PCL. Is this a shoot?
PCL. Well, I don't know. Maybe.
I think it was on the front page of The Observer that it was actually legit.
It was. So get well soon, I guess, because he's one of the better wrestlers on the brand. And now they bring him on TV and explain why he's going to be gone for a while. Perfect.
So yeah, he has a friendly conversation with Cameron Grimes, who comes in, and Sikoa's like, you know, I want to get the North American title. That's in my sights when I recover from the injury. And I want to win it on behalf of wrestlers like me and you. The implication being we do it the fair and honorable way.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And Cameron Grimes just looks a little bit, okay. He's clearly, someone's in his head.
Yeah.
And I think they're not paying rent.
Oh.
We get the highlight of the show next. And we had a conversation about this earlier, Murray. It was Apollo Crews defeating Roderick Strong, stemming from the events earlier in the night. Good back and forth, like really impactful match at its best. It's not blow away great, but it absolutely humiliates virtually everything else on this show by like a real distance as well. Some grappling early, and the bombs come back. It's not being funny. It's virtually every single NXT 3.5-star match you've ever seen, if I want to be really reductive about it. And the exact kind of selling you were talking about earlier in the show factors into the finish, where Roderick Strong gets destroyed, and then he comes back with a bit of fire and then realizes, actually, no, that actually really, really hurt. And then he gets put away at the finish. And Cruz wins, and that will, again, you would expect, lower Strong in the estimation of the Creeds going forward as part of the storyline.
Yeah, Daddy failed. Yeah, good match. Very good match. Comfortably the best thing on the show, obviously, as you would expect from the participants. The cloud to the silver lining of this existing, I've got that the wrong way around, however, is that, yeah, by comparison, it's like, oh, yeah, the rest of this is kind of amateur work on this broadcast when you compare it to this. But you'd expect that Strong's a good opponent for Cruz. Cruz, for me, even when he was Yuha Nation and doing Dragon Gate spots and stuff, he was kind of a spot guy, capable of incredible feats, yeah. But, you know, he's not going to tell this, like, psychologically rich story between the ropes or anything like that. So Strong's a really good guy to put him against because Strong is so good at laying out a match, and, like, he's going to do it in a way that ensures that the more propulsive moments that come from Cruz, like, are big and impactful, which was certainly the case here towards the end after he'd been controlled for extended periods. He comes to life. He's a super impressive guy, Apollo Cruz, always has been. A good professional TV match. Not necessarily anything like revolutionary in terms of layout, as you've touched upon. And a good example of, yeah, that style of selling. I think a lot of times, even today, a lot of people wrongly interpret this kind of thing as no selling or whatever, or like, oh, why is he not doing this and that? No, it's just a different variety. Roderick Strong's a very smart guy, and he succumbed to it in the end.
Yeah, and he created some real drama in the process.
Down the stretch.
Which is the entire point. Just to tie something that happens later into this, because it's all along similar lines. And the Creed brothers are again backstage studying film. Strong barges in, and he's demanding to know why they didn't second him to the ring, and that's what he blames the defeat on. And it's all sort of trending in one direction. One final accord was next, and just as you called it, Murray, it was a proper drone shot, cinematic meeting, and oh my God, this was so bad. So it kind of happens like in front of a water fountain, and a street, like a nightscape scene. And yeah, with like, Browns, like the Blade Runner Browns or whatever they are. Are they, what's he called? Nolan, like all that kind of.
Big Chris.
Yeah, Jesus Christ, so played out at this point. And they go to sit down. Do they sit down on a park bench? Do they sit down on something that naturally exists in that environment? No, there's like a wrestling table with a black sort of velvety cloak thing on it. Who put that there? Did Tony D put that there to make it sort of like polite? Like, oh, go on, like, you don't want to stand up. Like, it's late, I'm tired, let's just sit down. I've brought a nice table. It's ridiculous, it's so stupid, and the conversation isn't really particularly good. It's really tedious. They basically have this conversation, right? And it leads up to a match at Heatwave next week, the stipulations for which are if Santos Escobar loses, he's gone from NXT and he's unable to take the Legados with him, who will be stationed with the family going forward. So I guess there's an interesting outcome with main roster implications. So that's something. But like the line readings were terrible. It was all very boring. I just couldn't get my head around the fact, like, of this sort of thing is quite literally untenable. The storytelling is untenable. I've been using that word throughout this entire saga of a feud, which is somehow worse and more tedious than Frankie de Jong going from Barca to Man United, which I read about on Transfer Center every single day. It's just people no-selling the stipulation.
Yeah.
Right, okay, I didn't want to be in the family. Well, why did he agree to a match that involves you being stipulated to enter the mafia if you were to lose it? Oh, I'm just not going to be in it. All right, okay, we'll have a match then if you don't want to be in it. Well, why did you do the first match? If you do terrible Sopranos in wrestling, not only is it not wrestling and it's not Sopranos, but it doesn't really work as a stipulation because what are you going to do? Just be in it.
Yeah.
It's so stupid, and this thing is so stupid, and I can't wait for it to be over.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. It's a lot of people defend this stuff by going, oh, it's a TV show, it's not wrestling and all of this stuff, blah, 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 it's sports entertainment. And it's like, okay, sure. If it was good, if it was well acted, if it was well plotted, if it was well themed, it would still, for me, violate, you know, everything you've just discussed, but at least you could give it a bit of a pass and go, all right, well, I mean, good acting, all of this, but nah, it's like, this is a national television show, right? And this is a Z tier Soprano scene. Any rank amateur you pull off the street could probably do the same job that these fellas did in this segment. And yet it's got absolutely nothing to do with wrestling. Like, what is this? Like, why do we have, in 2022, why do we still have stipulations where if I pin you, your mates are my mates now, and they're not your mates anymore? It's like, not, like, if that was a thing... say you beat Michael Hamflett for the custody of me, I might just go, nah, I'm just going to go around Hamflett's for a cup of tea. Like, you know, I can do what I want. I'm an adult. Like, the people in Legado are adults. Make your own decisions. Yeah, this has nothing to do with wrestling. It's patently absurd. I'm vaguely amused by the Tony D'Angelo character still. What it's endearingly bad sometimes. In situations like this, it's just not... good. I like pro wrestling in my wrestling shows, and this has nothing to do with wrestling.
No. We've had various spirited philosophical debates about what we each consider to be professional wrestling in this office. Always fascinating. This isn't it, Top Judge. Yeah. This is absolutely not it. I think it can be meta. I think it can be niche. I certainly sometimes think it can actually sometimes be melodramatic.
Sure.
But it can't. This isn't it. Like, yeah. This is not wrestling, and it's not Sopranos. Is it?
So I'll illustrate the point I led with, right? I don't think anyone's interested in listening to me and you debating our contrasting opinions on this segment, but just to illustrate it, right? Le Dinner Debonair, right? I didn't like that. I didn't think it was pro wrestling. I thought it was... it's just impossible for me to invest in the idea that these guys are going to have this staged thing that they've rehearsed and all of that. So I think me, you, and Hamflett, we differ on this, but that's fine. But... I can give it a degree of credit because it was exceptionally well performed. Like, MJF has the voice of an angel, as we know from his rendition of You Are My Sunshine back in the day. Chris Jericho is a tremendous showman, right? So that had an elegance to the performance and the execution that when you're watching it, even if you're like me, you can go, okay, I don't really think this should exist, but my God, did they knock it out of the park. This is the polar opposite. So I think that's an interesting comparison point for anyone who might be weighing up my argument there.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like, basically, there are no rules, just do it good.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
just be good.
Just be good. It's not hard to be good.
Yeah, come on, guys. Why are you gooder?
And in the first of a double barrel blast of baby faces being bad, Wendy Chu channels Randy Orton. Why would you rip off something terrible? I just don't get it. Like, wrestling is the most plagiarism happy industry probably ever. Yeah. Like, Chris Jericho will go on his podcast and say, oh yeah, ripped it off from this. My entrance, oh, it's Michael Jackson when I saw him in Paris, or this, I plagiarized this. Arn Anderson, I hate this, but his most famous promo, an absolute rip-off of the Untouchables.
Yeah.
It's not his best promo by half, and I resent the fact that he kind of ripped it off a little bit when he's done so many more. Like, oh, so you put one of ours in the hospital, you put one of theirs in the morgue, mate, you're just ripping off a film. Like, yeah. Plagiarism is rife in professional wrestling. But if you rip off something good, that's a halfway decent idea. Why rip off the angle when Randy Orton dresses like a janitor, puts on night vision goggles, interrupts a poker game played between legends and beats them all up?
Yeah.
It was so cartoonish and so bad, and Wendy Chu does literally the exact same thing as a babyface to an absolutely unawares Tiffany Stratton.
Yeah, Vince McMahon must be writing these babyface things this week. Obviously, he's not. I'm joking.
It's but Big Pritch in it.
Yeah, Big Pritch. Juicy Brucey is on the loosey, and there is not anyone who can stop him, it seems. I like Wendy Chu better when she's being silly. I like her when she's funny, not when she's vengeful.
Yeah, I don't really like her at all. Oh. Pretty Deadly defeated Millie Blade and Idris Sanofi, in the match that stemmed from the... really quite misogynistic, quite frankly, yep. Show long angle with Lash Legend. It is a match. Josh Briggs and Brooks Jensen come down at ringside, and like dickheads, they just interfere when there's no real reason for them to do it. It backfires, allowing Pretty Deadly to win with Spilt Milk, I believe their finish is called. Why are babyfaces in WWE such dickheads?
Yeah. Yeah, the Brooks and Jensen came down for no other reason beyond other kind of feuding with Pretty Deadly, because it came during after the double team spot where they go through the ropes and punch one guy in the face, and it's like, it's a tag team match. That stuff happens in every beat. So it'd be a bit more believable if maybe they were being like really underhand and like, oh, they've tied him up on the outside or whatever. Yeah, it was just and then the silly finish. I will say, the Idris Elbow is an objectively brilliant name for a finisher.
Yes.
For Stringer Bell reasons, obviously. Crap finish. Two pretty decent teams in Ophi and Blade are big favourites in the office. Loads of fun. Pretty deadly. At least have a very strong grasp of who they are and know how to project that and know how to impart that on their work. They have good personality that comes through. But yeah, I mean, just bad booking.
There was an over-the-top rope dive here, which was majestic, I will point out. And the catch itself as well from the blonde deadly, whose name I'm not...
That's pretty.
Yeah.
That's pretty. Pretty. The other one's deadly.
Pretty's catch. It's like, oh my God. I couldn't believe this took place on an NXT TV show. It was so crisp and it didn't look like a catch. It just was one of those great catches. But that was the absolute best thing about this. Just in case you're interested as well, stemming again from that angle, Lash Legend attacked Fallon Henley and she's now aligned with Pretty Deadly, it would seem.
Yep.
Maybe on a temporary basis. The next segment is another woefully stupid thing. Usual caveat applies. Joe Gacy used to be pretty damn good, and he will presumably at some point in his career be pretty damn good again. He is, however, locked in this absolutely terrible gimmick alongside the Schism, and this is another terrible angle involving it, in which they sort of sidle up to Cameron Grimes. Cameron Grimes.
Like, he was grim on this show,
eh? He would be grim, and he'd be grim if he joins the stable. And they catch up to Cameron Grimes backstage, dude, Joe Gacy and the Schism, right? And this annoys me so much. They say, where are you going, Cameron? And Cameron, he's like, his confidence is shaking. He's nowhere near the same animated, sort of incorrigible guy he once was. He just goes, oh, I'm just going home. And they say, you going home to? Right. As we've established, Cameron Grimes, his father died.
Yes.
A few years ago. I think this was an allusion to that, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not shaming any grown-up who still lives with their parents. The economic situation in most countries is horrific and governed by arseholes who shouldn't, in a just world, be in charge. I'm absolutely in no way, shape, or form shaming people who are adults who still live at home, right? Cameron Grimes played a billionaire last year. Literally this time last year, he was playing a billionaire, right? How am I to believe that I've actually seen his property on this TV show? I don't think he ever lost his fortune. He didn't put it up in a fight or anything like that. No. So I still think the implication is he's got the Doge coin or whatever it was, money. Would he still be living at home? Or is he just like a loser in love? Which he kind of was as well earlier this year or last.
Yeah.
Like, if what are they saying?
Move on.
Okay. Nikita Lyons gives a pep talk to Zoe Stark ahead of the main event with Cora Jade. We then cut to Mackenzie Mitchell interviewing Apollo Crews. This sets up a interruption with Grace and Waller. It's probably going to end up in a fight at some point. In fact, the challenge is issue, but Waller walks away.
They'll have a match, and it'll probably be pretty good. Yep, that's my hot take on this one.
We're going to go to the main event. Thank God.
Hold on. Are we not going to cover the all-time great segment of JC Jane buying Ramones records?
Oh, my God. Yes, I completely forgot about this.
How could you? I'm not sure. I've got it written down just before the main event, but I forgot to write a lot of stuff down, so...
Anyway, so we get a further glimpse into the interior lives of Toxic Attraction, where they're talking about how the belts used to feel like a part of them, and they're kind of adrift spiritually without them.
And then
they are caught. They are captured. Gigi Dolan's in a bar.
Yep.
And JC Jane's in a record shop.
Getting some vinyl.
Just like my hipster twat mate, Andy Murray here.
Hello.
She's talking about rock music and what it means to be a fan of rock music. And it means you're not part of any dumb system and you're a rebel. And I think I'm making those things up, but she said something along those lines.
It was like, well, it doesn't give a damn and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, rock music doesn't give a damn, just like I don't give a damn. And Gigi Dolin smashes a glass and she says, we are not a part of your society or something like that.
We are not your kind.
We are not your kind, exactly.
Black and gold back.
So aren't these like qualities of like independence and defiance and are they turning babyface?
Yeah, I mean,
or they're just trying to make them look cool, K-E-W-L.
Wonder if maybe it's to provide a degree of separation, perhaps, from Mandy Rose. Maybe they're going to do something different with this group as a whole. I will say, like, I appreciate them at least, like, attempting to give them something a bit different beyond, because this group has always been quite transparent in the reasons for why it's been pushed and all of that stuff. It's meant to be a throwback to a certain era, and it's good to see them at least giving them something a little bit different that, you know, in a very NXT 2.0 kind of cartoon lens.
Absolutely. So the main event is next, and Zoe Stark defeats Cora Jade in a match I would describe as an over-delivery.
Yeah,
there were certain moments where I really was impressed by Stark in particular, but Cora Jade as well, that you can sort of mark her sense of improvement. There's one spot where she's got Zoe Stark draped in the ropes, right? And my absolute pet peeve in wrestling is intent. If you are working a spot, the goal of which is to miss and swing the momentum back forward, at least pretend you're going to hit it. Like, and she actually throws herself on the ropes, and the timing on Stark to avoid it was like very acute. It really felt like if she hadn't got away just in the nick of time, like her neck would have been wrung on those ropes. So that was really, really good indeed.
The force she hit the ropes, Cora hit the ropes with, and then rebounded back was really quite an impressive visual.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought it was a really good spot. We've got a German suplex as well.
Bump she took off that German suplex was wild. It was like she was trying to flip and land on her feet or something, wasn't it?
I think it was one of those where the idea was, oh, I'm just going to miss my head, but if you kind of blink in that moment, it'll look like, and I think they timed it really quite well.
Yeah, it looked nasty.
Yeah, nasty, but not injurious in any sort of way.
Injurious. Ooh,
and then the story of the match, right, is really annoying. WWE has this tendency with their baby faces. And I do not want to hate Roxanne Perez. I absolutely do not want to be cynical and go, oh, God, bloody Roxanne Perez is another bad baby face in WWE because she's so goddamn good. But the way that they build these matches, the story of the match basically is that Zoe Stark wins because Roxanne Perez comes out, kendo stick in hand, to distract.
Mm-hmm.
Like, would you ever see anyone good who's a baby face in a good promotion do this? No, you wouldn't. There's a certain... I'm going to try and coin something here, right? There's a certain nah quality to the WWE babyface where instead of just fronting up and squaring up to someone or fighting back against someone or evening the odds, they come out and do taunting like, I'm going to get you back, nah. And even though they plot it in such a way like, yes, it is in retribution for something they've done, they still conspire somehow to make them not feel like babyfaces out for vengeance. It just comes off as, nah, I'm going to cost you this match.
Yeah.
And it just really pisses me off, quite frankly, boils my piss. But in the end, Mandy Rose comes out, tries to jump Stark, fails. Stark beats her down, holds the title aloft, meant to signify that she is probably going to take the title, or at least she thinks she's going to do that ahead of their match. But I generally thought this is quite good, other than the nah, babyfaces are all dickheads.
Yeah, the bookings obviously whack. I don't know why Zoe Stark should need a distraction to win here.
Because she's not winning the title as well.
Right, exactly. Like, I, why can't she just win? And look, if you don't want to give Cora Jade a clean defeat, well, don't book this match. It's quite simple. The protection argument is untenable, to borrow your word of the day.
I love untenable.
It's a good word. It's 2022. Come on, we've seen these things 1,000 times before. It doesn't work. And yeah, Zoe looks like fortuitous. She looks like just a lucky person rather than a skilled person. And Roxanne Perez looks like a bit of an asshole for all this. And it's just like, I like both of these people. Why are you putting them in that light, my friends? But the match was pretty decent. It was. And Cora Jade is actually a lot more convincing as a heel than a babyface.
It's weird, that, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is. Perhaps it's a consequence of the way they book and lay their matches out. Or maybe she's just... because she was always this like fiery underdog type thing. Maybe she's just not naturally that. I don't know. But she feels a lot more comfortable. She looks a lot more assured. She projects a lot more personality as well in this role.
I agree. It's one of those where when I saw clearly for a few months that they were turning her heel, I thought that's a bad idea because she's got a certain charm and naivety and likability. That's just all these babyface characteristics. And I thought, are you even stupider than I thought for turning her heel? But apparently not. They've obviously seen something in it, in this rule. And honestly, to their credit, it's all absolutely working out. But let us know your thoughts on the Cora Jade turn, everything else on this show. Have we been way too harsh on it? You can let us know underneath the Twitter link to this podcast at WhatCultureWWE. Whilst you're there, you can follow Andy Murray at...
At Andy H. Murray. The H stands for Hoberto. There we go.
You can follow me at M Sidgwick. Once again, you can follow us all at What Culture WWE. Coming up later today, we will preview Quake by the Lake, the latest AEW Dynamite special. And I've worked myself into a seismic shoot, brother, because I'm thinking something major is going down. We are going to craft certain theories about what that might be later on this afternoon. So please stick around your podcast feeds. Sorry, easy for me to say. For that.
The Fiend.
And in the meantime, you like The Fiend.
He's arriving. He's going to fiend on Dynamite tonight, isn't he?
Better not, but we'll discuss it because the bullet point will get some goddamn traction. We'll just instantly dismiss it out of hand and move on to the actual viable things that might scan as
content production.
The big thing that Tony Khan is teasing but not teasing. Anyway, thanks for joining us as always. Sorry we were a bit miserable, but it's what this show does. See you later.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.